Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You're listening to an irreverent podcast.
For more unholy content from our friends, head to irreverent.fm.
Hey friends, welcome back to the Speaking of Church podcast. Or if you're here for the first time, welcome for the first time. Today we are here with somebody who is not here for the first time, Cynthia Vaca Davis. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me back, Josie.
I'm excited. Even more so now that Pup has shown up in your background there. Look at him. Oh my God.
The husky.
I love it. I don't have big dogs, so I just admire them from afar. Because my partner does not want me to have a big dog because I have three little dogs, and he says four is too much.
Four is a lot of dogs. Most day I've ever had at one time is three, and yeah, they were big, and that was a lot. So
it's my dream. I want a million. But anyways, we are here to talk about this documentary called Everybody.
Yes.
Everybody, everybody, not everybody, every space body.
Body, yeah, two words.
Yeah, which is all about intersex humans and what they go through.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you wrote a book about your journey with your friend who's intersex, which makes you uniquely informed. Well, not uniquely, but more informed than the average human, I would say.
Well, I still run into people all the time who tell me that they have never heard of intersex before.
Which is wild to me.
I know. Well, I teach freshmen, and we talk about a lot of social issues, and just a week or so ago, just in conjunction with one of the readings that we were doing, the subject of intersex came up, and I told them what I knew about it, and they said, "Oh, so that's the I in LGBTQI. We didn't know that." And I would say out of the 30 freshmen that I was speaking with, maybe two or three had even heard of intersex, and they're the younger demographic that's usually on top of things like that more, you know, quicker than the rest of us. But it's just not something that people still know a lot about. So it does so happen that I happen to have a number of intersex people in my life, and lots of them after the book, but the book basically being about a very dear friend of mine who is intersex, and basically asked me to write a story, gave me his story to tell, which is always such a hard challenge, you know, because I'm not intersex myself. I am a staunch ally, but it really very quickly became both of our stories, because I ended up getting fired from a Christian university for being outspoken about queer rights in general. And I think that if you are that, through that experience, I learned that to be an effective ally, you have to have skin in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, truly. Yeah. I mean, I am part of the LGBTQIA plus community, but I'm married to a man, and it's like, I have a very heteronormative lifestyle. So I also feel the need to still be an ally, even if I am in the community.
Right.
And intersex has always just been in my mind frame. Like, I've always known about it, probably because I read a lot of books as a kid. I remember specifically reading a memoir by this woman who, I mean, the title was something problematic because she used the term hermaphrodite, which is no longer the term to be used, everybody. That's not a thing. It's derogatory. Let's not use it. But I mean, she could use whatever she wants, I guess. It's her life. But I did read that like growing up. And ever since then, I just kind of knew it was a thing medically. and socially. But people don't know anything about it. So tell us a little bit about the documentary.
Yes. So the documentary, and to be clear, I didn't have anything to do with making or being in the documentary. It was a documentary that came out this summer and unfortunately did not get the, I don't think it got necessarily the attention that it deserved in theaters. When I went to see it, I went with my friend Danny, who is the friend that I was referencing earlier. Danny and his wife and my husband and I went, and we weren't the only ones in the theater, but I think there were like maybe two other people in the whole theater.
Yikes.
And it didn't stay long in the theaters. It had some there were some write-ups in the news and whatnot, but really it just did not get the box office attention that I believe it deserved, because I think it did a lot to demystify what intersex is. Mm-hmm. And I think it was done in a great way. It showed the stories of three intersex people and basically the themes around their stories were in the silence that surrounded them their whole lives. They were told either by their parents, basically by their parents, hey, something's a little different. It's really important that you don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And shame is powerful.
Yeah.
Shame does a lot to make you, like, it wasn't so much, I think that the parents were trying to protect them from ridicule, but the shame that developed around the silence and around their stories, and I think the big focus on the documentary was the surgeries that were done without their consent.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times when a child is born with ambiguous genitalia, doctors, it was fairly common for them to say, well, let's make a choice. It'd be fine. Let's socialize them, whatever. You know, we end up deciding, let's fit them into one of the boxes, male or female, and socialize them that way, and all will be well. And this faulty logic was based on a single, I guess you could call it case study that was done with twins. And one of the twins, the two male twins, one of them, there was an accident that happened in circumcision.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I should have prepared you that was coming.
It's okay. That's just like, I just think of a little baby and like.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's tragic. It was a tragic story because there was an accident done within the circumcision, and they said, well, you know, hey, this has happened. And if you raise them as girl, all will be well. You'll figure it out.
So wild.
And I mean, it ended badly. It ended very, very badly because.
Wait, was this person intersex already?
No, these were just regular twin boys.
Okay.
And the doctor made an error. Accident occurred, and they said, "Well, now we'll just say one's a girl and one's a boy, and raise them that way." And you know what? I think this faulty logic, it's just rooted in this idea that genitalia is everything in determining your gender, without realizing that it's really an interplay of several different systems. We have the endocrine system, we have our chromosomes, we have our primary sex characteristics, which is what people generally look toward. But then we have our secondary sex characteristics, and then there's brain function.
Mm-hmm.
So we have these systems that are all working on a continuum in all of us. None of our hormones are exactly the same, and none of our, our brain function will be identical. It's all just on a sliding scale. Mm-hmm. And if enough of those things are pointing male, you'll be male and you'll identify as male. You'll be cisgender. If enough of them are pointing female, you will fall into that. But the truth is there were, none of us are the ideal female, the ideal male, mm-hmm. we're all on this sliding continuum.
Yeah.
So this unfortunate incident that that happened with the circumcision really set the kind of precedent that it's all in the socialization.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of opened the door for intersex surgeries. Like, let's solve this right now and put this child on this track to grow up in the role of female or male, and everything will be fine. But it wasn't. The twin who actually had the circumcision done that was botched eventually did take back his male identity, but sadly committed suicide and is no longer with us.
I mean, that is one of the huge risks, right? Of right. having surgery that you did not consent to. I actually have pulled up here from the Cleveland Clinic other risks associated with intersex surgery, so people can understand like that this is not just like a casual situation. It's not just like, oh, you have a penis and a vagina, so let's chop off the penis. It's not, you know, it's a little more complicated than that. It's not the same for everybody. But I mean, part of the risks are decreased sexual function, which lots of men have an issue with already with being circumcised. So you know, decreased sexual function.
Right.
Infertility is a huge one. There's lots of scarring that can happen, which one is aesthetically not good, but also when you have internal scarring, that can be detrimental to your internal organs.
Absolutely.
Urinary incontinence. I mean, I can't imagine not being able to pee whenever I wanted. And you can be like, you can have a lot of urinary tract infections throughout your life. And these are just some of them, not even counting the mental load that it is, right?
Exactly.
I actually listened to a podcast recently, JVN's podcast, Jonathan Van Ness, and he had an intersex woman on there, and she said that growing up, her parents never told her that she was born intersex.
Oh.
And she only found out because she had to get something done at the doctor, and it was in her medical records that this had been done. And she was like, what the fuck? Yeah, which is problematic.
Absolutely.
In and of itself. This episode actually comes out around Intersex Awareness Day, which is October 26th. According to Amnesty International, I don't really know who like ascribes days to different things, but I like Amnesty
what the process is
so,
for
yeah.
that to happen. Right. Yeah. Right. Well, that has traditionally been Intersex Awareness Day for as many years as I've been studying intersex. So it's been standing for a while. I don't know who made the determination.
Right. But, yeah. So, I mean, let's talk about some myths surrounding intersex and even religion, because I mean that we are, you know, spiritual people, and we have a lot of experience with church spaces. I mean, one of the biggest myths that the church perpetuates is that everyone is born male and or male or female. Like, those are the two things, right?
Right. That is absolutely. I grew up never questioning that. And, right. you know, the students that I was talking with, you know, at the beginning when we started this conversation, my students that I had this conversation with just a week or so ago, all basically were surprised. But then I had several that said, but no, there's only two genders. That's all there is. And trying to basically say it as a statement, like I was giving them bad information.
Yeah. Which is, you know, I mean, it kind of goes back to Christianity not being a fan of science and people that know better. But I mean, something else is that people say that it's very rare and something we don't have to worry about because there's not very many of them, which is not really the case. According to experts, I'm reading this off of Amnesty International. So anybody have questions about experts, ask them. But it is widely known that 1.7% of the population is born with intersex traits.
Yes.
Which sounds small, But that's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. I mean, we have all of us. When I use the collective we. Intersex people are our neighbors and mm-hmm. our classmates and our coworkers. Everybody mm-hmm. has come in contact with an intersex person, whether yeah. they realize it or not. The common kind of rule of thumb is that it's the same prevalence as red hair.
Oh, so, shit. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, you see someone with red hair, and you know, and now that I know that, every time I see a redhead person, like, you know, it's a reminder that mm-hmm. as often as we see someone with red hair, that's as often as we're seeing someone who's intersex, statistically yeah. speaking.
And we all know that redheads exist, so intersex people exist, you know, per
right.
numbers happening. I find it fascinating. Being a church person and like this notion that God made you exactly as you want or as he wanted you to be. God, you know, you are perfect. And that's what people use against transgender people, right? And wanting to affirm their gender.
Right.
But then we get to intersex people and all of a sudden, nobody knows what to do in the church. Nobody knows how to react. So what was your experience with this specific situation with you and your friend?
So our situation was, it started off that everything was going very, very well because my friend who it was born intersex had double puberty. And
yeah, I forgot that part. Damn.
Yeah, double puberty and didn't say anything to anybody because instinctively when you grow up in evangelical spaces, you kind of have a just an innate knowledge. This isn't the kind of thing that you are going to be able to talk about.
Ugh,
and it's taboo. Mm-hmm. So my friend Danny kind of knew that talking about this was risking family. It was risking church family. It
safety.
Was risking safety. And you know, without anyone's explicitly stating this, just mm-hmm. he knew it.
Which is curious, by the way, that we all instinctively know what we can and cannot talk about in an evangelical church.
Right. Even if we haven't been told this is a thing we don't talk yep. about, we know, we know.
Yep.
So Danny knew this. And so, at the time when this all came to a head and he knew he needed to come out, he was, about 40 and had not told really anybody. But one of the things to know about intersex is that because of the surge of hormones and the amount of male and female hormones competing, oftentimes what happens, and really it's different for everybody. One intersex story is just one intersex story. But mm-hmm. oftentimes there'll be a issue with the hormones competing that leads to a lot of physical problems. Mm-hmm. And this is what was happening with Danny. Danny realized that his health was in jeopardy and that basically anything female was starting to shut down.
Right.
And that this was going to be the moment that for his health, he was going to have to say, hey, and I always refer to Danny as he and in the masculine. Even back then, we were not using male pronouns for mm-hmm. Danny. But Danny basically approached me and said, you know, I know, and was working with a life coach at the time who kind of said, I think maybe you should talk with Cynthia, talk with her husband, because they are kind of have a reputation of being allies. Certainly wasn't perfect as an ally, but we had a lot of friends that were in the community. And so Danny said, hey, I'm really trying to build a support system right now. I may lose everything. I may lose my family. I may be kicked out of church. We're going to the same church. And I'm trying to just get a support system around me because I have to, for my health, make this change. And this mm-hmm. is who I am. This is how it is. So at first in our church, they treated it like a medical situation. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how it was presented. We have a member of our community who has a medical situation, and this is what it is. And some people in our church actually had heard of intersex and were able to actually be advocates and say, oh yeah, I've heard of that. I have some medical training and I've heard of that. So it seemed at the beginning to be going very, very well. Mm-hmm. But as Danny truly began to ditch everything female and truly walk into life as what he considered he always has been, mm-hmm. Start dating. And, you know, that is when the tide turned.
Mm-hmm. Because now they see something that's is similar to transgender, because they don't fully understand the liminal space that Danny existed in.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's when the support just kind of, you know, some of the more generous donors of the church said they were leaving. And, you know, when the purse strings are being controlled by, mm-hmm. you know, that's where things start to take an ugly turn.
Yep. Yep.
So yeah, we don't go to church there anymore. And,
good. Yeah. I mean, I think this is a great example of the medical intervention that, one, we all need to have access to, not just people that are intersex, right? Gender affirming care is not only like, oh, I want to change genders. It's Danny, my organs are shutting down and I need to have them removed or whatever. Or I need hormones to help with the process so I'm not sick all the time, or blah, blah, blah,
exactly.
Blah, blah.
Exactly.
Right.
But most of the intersex people that I know that are, you know, around middle age, mm-hmm. start to have a lot of very, you know, serious medical issues, mm-hmm. that it's just rooted in their complex body structure. Yeah. I have a friend who has, you can take tissue samples from different parts of her body, mm-hmm. and it will either, some will say male, some will say female.
Yes. What a superpower. I mean, in my head, I'm like, wow, you can get away with murder. But that's just me and my true crime obsession. Oh, I know, that's awful. That's funny. But I've also heard of people that who are intersex whose parents didn't do the surgery when they were kids. And
right.
Like, I don't want to change anything. And they don't. I mean, maybe unless they have to later on, but they're comfortable with who they are and how the good Lord made them, everybody. But having access to that care is still vital, right? And I mean, how many legislators are trying to take it all away?
So many.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, this care is useful for those of us who are not intersex, who are not transgender. I mean, how many women need hormonal therapy because their body is just not producing enough or is producing too much of one thing? And that's right. All kind of the same situation, the same umbrella care.
And we see how things start to snowball, right? Mm-hmm. Like even with Roe versus Wade being overturned, it is impacting people that have no interest in getting an abortion. You know, right. It's impacting people who are dealing with other physical issues that they're using some of these same medicines that mm-hmm. can be involved in medical abortion, but they're being used in an off-label purpose for some other problem. So we're seeing a trickle down where it's never just the targeted group mm-hmm. that is impacted when they start making legislation. Yep. It's just there's trickle down consequences.
Yeah. It's like, so I have fibromyalgia and I take an antidepressant to help alleviate the pain. And if for whatever right. reason they decided that antidepressants were now illegal, then I wouldn't have my medical care to help alleviate my body's pain.
Exactly.
Like, it's like that. Yeah. Which is
100% perfect abhorrent. Example.
Yeah. I mean, also just to reiterate or just to make things clear, being intersex is not the same thing as being transgender. Just want to make that clear. They are very different, even though they do use the same medical, you know, care and jargon.
Right.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. And this is something that I think is important to this conversation that a lot of people don't realize, because I call this the intersex exception. People want to say, well, if you're intersex, that's a gray area. That's an exception. Mm-hmm. Intersex people didn't do anything wrong. But here's the problem with that. Because of the five different systems that I talked about that all play into how people, you know, identify with their gender, there are some ways to be intersex that don't manifest in a way that anybody mm-hmm. can see. For instance, your chromosomes. I have never had a chromosomal test done. It's just not standard. Mm-hmm. So you could have, and this happens a lot with androgen insensitivity syndrome, which is a type of intersex where, and I know somebody who has it, where they were, looked visually female, you know, their sex at birth, never questioned their being female, but then did not have a normal female puberty, didn't get a period. So doctor checks it out, does some tests, and turns out she has male chromosomes.
Cool. I still think it's so cool.
It is. And so here she's people are rushing to assure her, you're still a woman, you're still a woman, don't worry. Right. You know, even though your chromosomes are male, you're still a woman. But it's people want to pick and choose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that a lot of intersex conditions are never identified as such. So mm-hmm. somebody that just appears outwardly to just all of a sudden want to make a transition, and a lot of conservatives will say, yep, they just wake up and decide they want to change and just don't like who they are. And that's never the way that it is. Mm-hmm. We don't know that someone who just seems to be wanting to make a transition for no apparent reason, mm-hmm. we don't know what their brain function is. We don't know what their hormonal situation is. We don't know what their chromosomes are. Mm-hmm. We don't know if they truly may even be intersex.
And you're not really entitled to that information, right? You're not entitled to know if somebody's intersex and therefore it's okay for them to change genders before your eyes, right?
Right. And one of my intersex friends said to me, we do not have the luxury of assuming anything about someone we perceive as trans.
Mm-hmm.
Just because we perceive that they just seem to be a trans person that just made a decision, no one has the luxury to make that that judgment. We don't mm-hmm. know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when it gets dangerous to just say, oh, there's an exception for intersex people. We'll accept intersex people, but not trans people. How do you know?
Mm-hmm.
Would be my question.
And why do you care?
And why do you care? I mean, there's that. A lot of evangelicals care.
I know. I mean, like, I get so stuck on this whole gender issue because I would consider myself to be a more masculine woman. I mean, I dress feminine sometimes and I wear boys' clothes. Like, I do all this stuff, right, that people would consider atrocious in the evangelical church. My partner is, you know, more classically feminine, emotionally, I should say. He's, you know, whatever. Just like the roles, whatever. Yeah.
Right. My husband said to me a couple weeks ago, there are some things about you that are a little more like the way a man would do it than a female. And like I said, and it goes back to that sliding scale. You
mm-hmm. know? Exactly. Yeah. And I just find it hard to like associate certain things with certain genders. I mean, one, because I understand that gender is a construct. But like my dad will say, boys shouldn't wear skirts. And I was like, tell that to Jesus and everybody else at that time. Okay. Like,
exactly.
Like all of this is just made up. Like, why can't we fully, like in Rome, people, like men wore mini skirts. Yeah. Like this is just a cultural concept and why people don't understand this. Like, yeah. Like, what do you care if somebody decides that they don't want their dick anymore and they want a vagina? Like, why do you care? Just, I don't know. Like, you know, that's me as a pansexual person who is attracted to everybody in the world. I don't care. I don't find it disgusting at all. But, you know, people are weird.
People are weird and people are judgy.
Yes, people are judgy. Yeah, I mean, especially in the church. I mean, how many of us, like, When I first started going to the church that I attend now, it was such a breath of fresh air because we have transgender folks in our church, and it was just not nothing. We didn't talk about it, not because it was a secret, but because it was just accepted. Like, it was, yes, this person is trans. The end. Like, nobody treated them differently.
Right. You don't need the backstory. You right. don't need all the statistics to, yeah. you know. Is this legitimate? Is this mm-hmm. a real transition? What did you do? You know, we don't mm-hmm. need all that just to treat someone with respect, dignity, and love.
Right, right. And I mean, the ramifications of people, intersex people existing in this world are not minor, right? I mean, we look at people who are transgender and the mental health issues that they face. They're pretty similar to people who are intersex. In the sense of depression, they're more likely to commit suicide.
Yeah.
It's and all of this is societally based, right? Like, because they're ostracized from society in some
Absolutely.
Ways.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think if for no other reason, and there are many other reasons, but if for no other reason, this is why I don't know why the church doesn't care, because mm-hmm. the supposedly pro-life evangelical church does not seem to care that queer people are dying mm-hmm. at higher rates than other populations. Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes a direct result of things the church is doing
mm-hmm.
and the way that they are excluding people and making them feel that shame and live in shame. And I think that if for no other reason that you can't find any other reason to care, if you're pro-life, you should step up.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we want everyone to have every baby that's conceived, but God forbid that baby comes out as intersex or trans or mm-hmm. In some way, you know, divergent, because mm-hmm. the church is going to be there to support you.
Yep. And I mean, this is like an issue with literally any deviation from the quote unquote norm. Like, the church is just not equipped to handle any deviation.
Absolutely.
I mean, I have a cousin who has 3 autistic sons, and she's always been kind of interested in going to explore faith. I mean, she grew up Catholic, but she's like just more curious because she fears death because of her children, which is what she's admitted to me, which is fine. Like, that's a very valid reason for exploring right. faith. But she
yes.
doesn't feel like she can, because what if she doesn't have somebody to watch her kids? You can't just put her 12-year-old in, you know, children's church, because they're not going to know how to handle his level of autism, right? Like, he's less independent.
Right.
And so she's kind of like shamed into not going to church. When
she has no access to right. that support system. Mm-hmm. What could be in the right... you know, if everything were working the way it should be, that should be a source of community and strength mm-hmm. and help for yeah. her and her family. But instead, she doesn't even have access to it.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, it's not that hard, right? But this is like the thing with the church, is that there's no real support for real issues that are plaguing real human beings. It's just,
which makes it irrelevant, and exactly. that's why the church is losing its relevance, because exactly. you want to meet the people where the people
yeah.
are.
Yeah, yep. Like, I can't imagine any human being able to go to a church and say, "Hi, pastor, I'm really thinking of killing myself. Can you help me out?" Like, that would not go well in most churches. No. And if you are trans, if you are gay, or any other reason, it's going to go much worse. Because
absolutely,
I mean,
you're not going to get the encouragement, you're not going to get the help, you're not going to get the resources.
They're probably
not going to feel welcome.
You should pray about it. That's it. Yeah. Like, or they'll pray over you and that's it, but they don't actually offer good resources, right? And it's
right.
But I want to get into this, the concept that early medical intervention for intersex children is against their human rights, which I truly believe.
It's right, a human rights violation. And I think that was, if there was one single takeaway from the Everybody documentary, was that mm-hmm. to end the surgeries, mm-hmm. that it should be a personal choice. And The other thing, again, because one intersex story is just one intersex story. Danny had, there was no choice that was made for him because his parents didn't know. And oftentimes that is the case. And like the, my friend with the androgen insensitivity syndrome, there was no choice to be made because nobody knew. Nobody could see anything that would lead them to say this is an intersex person. So intersex is an umbrella term. There's so many different ways to be intersex, which is another thing that people often don't realize, that it's not just one thing. It's not going to manifest in the same way with any two people.
I believe there's like 40 different recorded variations so far of intersex, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that sounds like a lot. Like that sounds like a, like the very, I don't know. That's a lot of variations which require different medical interventions later on in life, not early on in life. Right.
Exactly.
And also like when it comes, cause I'm a very body positive person. I'm just like, love everything about yourself. I feel like this also comes like with body positivity, right? Like if you happen to be born with a vagina and testes, if you're into it, be into it, you know, like,
right.
But as a parent, you shouldn't remove something that is not yours to remove. It is not your body.
And we don't think about how it's going to change how that body functions and how that person is going to feel physically, spiritually, emotionally on any level. They're just not decisions that you can make in advance.
You have no idea the ramifications, which is cruel. If you don't know the ramifications of the surgery that you're having, like informed consent is such a huge part of medical intervention. And if you cannot be informed, you should not intervene.
Exactly.
I'm just,
Yeah. And that was, I think that was there were so many aspects of that documentary that made it worth seeing to understand how people grew up, how it could have even happened in the first place. They get into some of the science. They tell the story of how that I was talking about in the beginning of how we even got here with the one study with the twins. But I think that was the major message was bodily autonomy and letting people make the choices for themselves when they get to the age where they can.
I agree. As somebody who wants to get a boob job, I agree. My partner does not want me to get a boob job. And I'm like, my body, my choice, baby. Like, I know it's your money. It's our money, but my body, my choice. Yeah, that's a funny joke, everybody. Okay, don't come at me. but I mean, let's talk about how people who are intersex face incredible discrimination, not just in the church, but everywhere. I mean,
right.
If you're born in the wrong country, not the wrong country, but in a less accepting country, if you're born in this country and you live in the South or you live in like
these right, conservative, the wrong state.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Like this is a huge issue. I mean, so 3 in 5 LGBTQ intersex individuals avoid doctors specifically to avoid experiencing discrimination.
Yes.
And that is for anything, not like,
yes.
And that's unacceptable to me.
As somebody, and that's another reason, and along with suicide, that's another reason why a lot of queer people do not have the life expectancy of non-queer people because of that.
Yeah. I mean, 9 in 10 people who are intersex, I'm reading off of AmericanProgress.org, everybody, by the way. I'm not just talking on my ass. I did some research. 9 in 10 LGBTQ intersex individuals report some level of poor health, with a lot of them being a lot, like nearly every day they have issues with their health. So not only do they need to see a doctor, but they cannot see a doctor because it could go very badly for them. Correct. Not only would, like, if you're not telling anybody and you live in a small town and you go to the doctor tells, like, you have no idea what could happen because people are so hateful towards people who vary from the norm.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know if Danny has had any issue with that where you guys live, but.
Actually, things have gone so much better for Danny since he's been out. Perfect. A lot of what you're saying was what his life was like even as an adult, before he came out, because he didn't know how a doctor would respond to him. Mm-hmm. And he didn't want to be outed, as you were saying. So especially when he was still living at home, he would just basically, his medical plan was prayer. You know, just pray that I don't have to go to the doctor. Don't sign up for any non-recreational sports where yep. I might have to have a physical. I need to make sure that I do not need to go to the doctor, mm-hmm. Which is a not great medical plan.
And also not a great mental health plan either. What if you want to play soccer?
Exactly. We are in Virginia, and the laws so far have not been restrictive. But I do know that you have to keep watching. Mm-hmm. You have to keep watching the laws, because there are definitely people who are living in places where they don't feel safe and feel that they need to make a change because they're not safe where they are.
Yeah. And I would add that churches need to stop discriminating. I mean, this is just obvious. Like, they need to stop discriminating against all people who are different than them. But what are some things that you think churches can do to help intersex folks and transgender folks? Let's just go for it.
I think that's a great question. I think that there are churches that are mm-hmm. welcoming to anyone from the queer community. And when that happens, I think that is a beautiful thing. Unfortunately, it's not the norm. Mm-hmm. I think it would be, you mentioned science at the beginning. Friends with science can be a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. When we open our minds to, and you know, I think I say that because very literally, I think science can be something that really does inform and guide. I'm always an advocate for stories though. Sometimes mm-hmm. stories will do the heavy lifting that just facts and figures won't. Mm-hmm. We have a hard time, we had a hard time even absorbing, what does it mean for 1.7% of the population? Is it a small number? Is it a big number? What does it mean? We have a hard time with those numbers. They're impersonal. But when we open our hearts to stories, I think that that is when we start to truly change, because it's not just the statistic. This is, this person is mm-hmm. right here and is telling me about their lives and how things have been for them mm-hmm. living in their skin. So I would say that churches would do very well. Everybody would do well. But if churches are really interested in knowing how to serve people that are intersex, they should be open to stories. They should mm-hmm. be open to, people should feel safe that they can go into a church, talk to people, tell their stories, and be heard and seen mm-hmm. rather than judged. And I think, like, as we're talking, we're talking about different concepts. I'm speaking out of memory, really, mm-hmm. from things I've studied and researched, and you're there on the computer and you're pulling things up. And, you know, that's the beauty of when you don't shut down a conversation mm-hmm. and you don't say, we don't talk about that here. Or mm-hmm. that's not a safe topic for here, or you need to pray. You know, when we don't shut things down with pat answers and we allow for conversation, and then conversation leads to curiosity, and then people start to check things out and they go, this statistic relates to this person over here. Now I get it. Mm-hmm. I think that stories can be an amazing teacher, and I would wish that churches would be more welcoming to people and their stories.
I agree. And as always, my advice would be to leave those churches if they don't like stories and science. Skedaddle. There's plenty of gay churches out there, all right? Let me tell you, as somebody who runs a gay church, we're pretty great. We're pretty fun. We're going camping this weekend. We're going to drink some beer, you know. No Bible study at our camping trip. It's going to be chill. Not a regular church camping trip. It's a cool church camping trip.
I want to go to your gay church.
It's pretty cute. It's also a very pretty building, so it really helps with the aesthetic, because I hate ugly churches. That's my own personal cross to bear, is hating ugly churches. There's no carpet in my church. Nope. Well, this has been a very informative conversation, I think, for people. I really wanted to kind of highlight with this like documentary coming out and your book and just being gay, another section of the LGBTQIA plus community. And thank you so much for coming. Tell people all about your book and where they can get it.
And yeah, my book is called Intersection with an X. Intersection. A lot of people misspell it, and then you can't find it if you don't spell it right. So right. Intersection with an X, it is, it's available on Amazon. It's really available on any of the online retailers. Any bookstore can order it if it's not already there. If it's not there, people should ask why it's not there, really.
Yeah, ask your bookstore to stock it. You can do that.
But yeah, it's available wherever fine books are sold.
Yeah. I love it. And where can people find you online?
So I have a website, CynthiaVacaDavis.com. Mm-hmm. I'm on Instagram again with my name, although I have
underscores.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And on Instagram, I'm most active on Instagram. And my email, CynthiaVacaDavis@gmail.com. I'm open through all those channels.
Sick. And for those of you who wanting to watch the documentary, Every Space Body, you can find it on Peacock, Amazon Prime, or Apple TV, allegedly. If it's not there, I just Googled it, okay? Don't come at me. But check those three places. I'm sure you can rent it somewhere as well. Well, this has been a great conversation. I hope you guys learned something. As always, you can find Speaking at Church at Speaking in Church on Instagram. You can find me and my dogs and my crocheting at Josie Takes the World. We have a tip jar and we have merch, all of that you can find on Instagram. But other than that, stay woke and get woke, friends, please. Please. Bye.
Bye.